So, robots. We have certainly been aware of them for many, many, many years with respect to automata and so on. In fact, this year we're almost approaching the centenary of the release of Carol Čapek's Rossum's Universal Robots, and that ended in tears, maybe setting the scene for a whole variety of other bits and pieces, which maybe, whether you view them as being our friendly souls like C-3PO and R2-D2, or indeed the silent-running Huey, Louie and Dewey, they're with us, they're doing their own thing, and maybe we should actually be using them more when it comes to curbing pandemics like, of course, COVID-19. Now, to talk about this, as we celebrate National Robotics Week, we're delighted to welcome from the School of Mechanical Engineering at the University of Leeds, the awesomely talented Professor Robert Richardson. How are you, Robert?
Thank you. Yeah, good afternoon.
And I think it's fair to say we're not doing a Turing test, so we are hopefully two human beings communicating with each other as opposed to artificial intelligence, or indeed artificial general intelligence, AGI, which I think is being touted as the next stage forward. One of the things, Robert, about this particular aspect in terms of robots is people tend to be polarised by their views, and the research in the robotics industry has come up with some really interesting things in terms of the way in which mass production aspects with respect to coping with COVID-19 and indeed future pandemics which might be occurring, they're all impact on this. But are people still very suspicious when you say, yes, I'm part of the robotics and automotive autonomic nervous system research here?
No, I think people actually are getting much more used to the idea of technology and have seen the benefits of technology. So I think people, when I say to them that I do robotics, for example, they're generally really interested, really excited by the idea of it. Of course, there's a difference between being excited about a robot that's going to be in space or somewhere else and having a robot in your house. But I do believe that people actually are really quite open to that and they can see the benefits of them. So I think that over the last few years, they've become less sensitized to them and quite used to seeing that kind of thing around.
Back in the day when we used to have open days in Flesh World, as opposed to virtual open days, I know Mark at the University of Lincoln was a very popular aspect with respect to visitors. But as I said, we've kind of known about robots and automata for quite some time. It's the fifth year of UK Robotics Week that we're right in the heart of now, and organised by the UK Robotics and Autonomous Systems Network. Clearly, science fiction, it's worked on the premise of Imagineering, but for every kind of good robot, or Robbie the Robot, shall we say, there's always James Cameron's Terminator that springs to mind, and there's a bit of a suspicion in terms of, hang on, what happens if the machines actually get cleverer than we human beings?
I mean, that's, of course, one of the general concerns. But I think you think of robots really as being smart tools. So all the things we're doing are around people that can actually help you, they can do things, they can take some of the physical load from you, so do things for you, but also some of the thinking, perhaps, you know, in terms of doing certain kinds of tasks, but they're always going to be guided, led, and working for people. So I think that the kind of thought about robots actually having independent thought, there's a difference between a robot learning, for example, to pick a bottle up, which we can do, we can see images of the bottle and pick it up. That's very different than having what we call independent thought and deciding, actually, today I'm going to have a day off, I'm going to just sit in bed or something, or today I'm going to go into something else. That's a very different kind of thing.
Do the two things in terms of research very much fit together in terms of artificial intelligence making smarter robots, or are they kind of separate branches of research, or is it a case of, well, of course, we're heading towards singularity?
Well, I think so. Of course, the AI side of things is able to learn and these days, of course, access the cloud information elsewhere, so it has lots of knowledge about what's going on. But we really need to do things physical in the real world as well. So if you have just purely AI, it can do things, it can make decisions in a computer science sense, but it can't do anything. So what we need is smart machines that have great physical ability to be able to do things efficiently, environmentally friendly. But also we need, of course, the machine learning intelligence side of things, right, to make choices and decisions. So you need both of them, I think. So a machine of the future will be definitely a fusion of these two aspects together to make kind of a really useful robotic tool.
Now, the headline of this particular piece was clearly whether robots could help curb pandemics like the one we're either just coming out of, going to go into another second wave, or whatever. I mean, I'm sure there are one or two people who would say, yeah, can we not have a robot as Prime Minister? They're going to do a better job. No comment. We're not going to go political on this. But in terms of that, would you like to just talk us through how robots and the robotics industry could actually help in the battle against COVID-19 and possible future pandemics?
Yeah, so one thing they can do, so of course we have robots already in factories that are making things very efficiently. When we first had the pandemic, we had this requirement for different things, protective equipment, of course, and people were working really hard doing amazing things to create this kind of equipment. But a factory that has more robots, that is more robotized, can actually adapt very quickly to be able to change what it's producing. So one day it's producing bottles, perhaps in 2 days' time it's producing face masks, for example. So it's much more a flexible, resilient way of doing things. Of course, also we've actually rated for like deliveries and things, so things people are delivering to our house, people are putting themselves in harm's way. So we can use robotic devices to deliver things. If it's small, potentially it could come via a drone in the sky, or for large deliveries, potentially via an autonomous car. And that's certainly one way of actually reducing the contact of things. Hmm. And also, we've always wanted to offer clean spaces, have clean spaces, but now more than ever, we want to have spaces that are really hygienically clean. But we can use robots to do more cleaning. And of course, the good thing about that is we don't put people in harm's way, so the robots can do the cleaning. And if they are cleaning things which are hazardous, then of course no one's there to be fall ill with it.
Yeah. Although I suppose there is that notion of, oh, it's a computer virus he's got, oh dear Lord, that's another line entirely. Let's perhaps not go there. UK Robotics Week, fantastic that it's taking place. An awful lot of events are online. Would you like to just share with us, as the chair, of course, of the whole organising body behind the UK Robotics Week, what kind of things are you looking to see developed, presumably online, over the week itself?
Yeah, so this year is a bit different. So normally we have, of course, huge amounts of events where people can go physically to them. But this year is different. We still have lots of things going on. So we have lots of webinars so people can log on, learn about medical robots, learn about robots in oil and gas. We have a school robot challenge. So you can download an app to your tablet or your phone, and you can build a robot, try it out in an environment, and actually try to compete for a prize in that sense. There's also webinars about how you can go learn about making robots and what that kind of thing is going on. So, that's my doorbell. Lots of things going on. So, yeah, so it's a jam-packed agenda.
If only you had a robotic butler to actually go and answer your doorbell. Do you need to take that? Or do you go get you? Okay. It's just, you know, just that one moment. In terms of breakthroughs, though, are we talking about the notion of autonomous cars, driverless cars that we've heard about? And again, you've got that notion there, which I think is actually classified as philosophically as the carriage problem. Which decision does the robot actually make in order to actually cause the least amount of harm to life? Does it actually sort of save the driver? Does it save the pet, et cetera, et cetera? I mean, there's lots of philosophical debates going on about that. From your own perspective, Robert, what would you say we can look forward to over the next 5 years?
Yes, I think the next 5 years, people often ask me what's going to be the most exciting development in robotics, and they probably expect me to say things like space robots, robots going to different worlds. But if you, which of course is amazing, but if you look at what's going to make the biggest difference for us as individuals, I think it's going to be perhaps more the perhaps dull robots, so robots to maintain the city, for example, to maintain the pipes, maintain things like that. If we do that, we can stop leakage. So lots of that sort of thing going on. Robots in agriculture, so being able to sort of pick fruit. There's a whole thing about the low-touch economy, back to the pandemic sort of issues. Can we try to get things from the field to the house, the least possible contact from people? Lots of work in that area. And like you say, autonomous cars are really coming on rapid leaps and bounds. So we're going to see 5 years. I think we already can see some things. Potentially, it'll be more researchy things in 5 years, but certainly very soon we'll have the reality of autonomous cars.
Robert, I think I asked you this a few years ago, but do you have any particular favourite robots from the world of science fiction? I mean, I'll throw my two pennies into that. I've always had a soft spot for Wall-E and indeed Robert the Robot from Fireball XL5.
Actually, I was going to say exactly the same thing. I love Wall-E the Robot from the cartoon film. That's amazing. So yeah, when I look at all these robots, I think they kind of inspire me and make me want to do more. So they're amazing.
Fantastic stuff. Robert, it's been awesome sharing some thoughts with the good self. Just point the listener into a place that they can go to if they want to find out more information about National Robotics Week, or indeed the fabulous work that you're doing at the University of Leeds.
Yeah, so you can follow us on Twitter, so at UK Robotics, or go to our website, which is UKRAS, that's UKRAS.org.
There's a long debate we could actually have about automated bots on Twitter and social networking sites as well, but that's another line for another debate. For the moment, Robert, many thanks indeed. We hope we'll be able to speak with you again in the not-too-distant future.
Yeah, fine.
Professor Robert Richardson from the School of Mechanical Engineering at the University of Leeds, also Director of the Institute of Design, Robotics and Optimization. Many thanks indeed. Idea what's going on. A theme which could be often said about a David Fox magic show when you think, how's he doing that? It's amazing. It's just stunning. David Fox, welcome back to the Midweek Drive. How are you, sir?
Very good, sir. Lovely to be back, Alex. Lovely to be back.
I think our last phone link that we did with your good self was when you were halfway up Ben Nevis, or indeed at the top of Ben Nevis, if memory serves. So I think you're in a slightly lower sea level aspect now at Nottingham Trent University, if memory serves.
We certainly are, yes. Yeah, it's a bit a lovely day here in Nottingham, so it's nice to be out in the sunshine, and I hope you're all keeping well. It's great to hear from you again.
Well, I mean, when you say all, of course, in the studio we have my faithful companion Spike, and indeed Jesse has made an appearance, actually, for the first time, as lines of that. They don't speak, as yet, yeah. Telepathy, etc., because clearly we're socially distanced, and Midweek Driveouts are very much connected via telephonic links, and so on. So that's the way it actually works. works. Interesting enough, though, talking to one of our other regulars, Sarah Bullimore, and indeed Lauren Wood from the New York Book Festival, on Friday the 10th of July, I see that taking place at Carriages Cafe, one of the rare live events at the New York Book Festival, Wellbeing Through Words with Leanne Moden. So that's between 1 and 3 p.m. The rest of the festival is online. But I was intrigued to find, when you spoke to Sarah, that Carriages Cafe, who was, again, the last time I believe we saw you in action as opposed to in the studio, doing a fantastic evening with your good self and a mini history of magic, I believe. Have you thought of putting that online? Maybe you already have put it online, David.
Well, no, it was a lovely night at Carriages. It was great that you came along and gave a wonderful introduction, which really got the night going, Alex. So I was very appreciative of it. Carriages is a fantastic venue, so I will certainly try and get along there on the 10th of July. Coming back to the magic point, I have been able to do a couple of Zoom magic shows for people since we last spoke. So they actually went a lot better than I thought they would. So that's something that I will continue to put on, like you're doing your good self. I know that you're obviously not able to get into the studio at the moment, unfortunately, but it's great to hear the midweek drive is still going. And you're still obviously communicating with people all over the world, as you always do.
Well, America we have connected with, and we'll probably sort of look at various other aspects as well. It's almost because the studio I'm actually in is probably the precursor to the Siren Studios at the University of Lincoln. So it's almost going back to one's roots, really, from that line. And why not, indeed? Now, Zoom is something I'm sure I will probably sort of engage with in the not too distant future, but. I'm not saying it's National Robotics Week as well that we've been celebrating with the wonderful Professor Robert Richardson, which I always think, I mean, there is a connection here, and I'm sure Robin Pierce might make connections as well between if you've got a speciality in robots and your name is Robert. I like it. You know, there is obviously during the interview I would not allude to that, but there's a definite sort of connection there. I did actually try to do the Turing test just to confirm that he was not an artificial intelligence, but I think he's passed. And of course he's passed. Is this something when you took to the Zoom thing, do you think, is this the way forward now? Is it a case of it's all online, or is it a kind of blip and come 2021 we can say we'll get back to what it used to be, or is that a case of that's a fool's gold? We're never going to get back to that. We're always going to be online because, in the words of Greta Thunberg, we've got to think about the planet.
Well, I think it certainly has its place, and I think it will evolve. A lot of people are very comfortable using Zoom. As a teaching aid, I mean, I have used it also as a teaching aid. I, maybe a bit like yourself, Alex, I do like to have that one-to-one, you know, or working with a group that you can pick up on things. Certainly as an entertainer, the audience in front of you can read their faces, you can obviously adjust your show slightly if you feel that certain things need to be tweaked a little bit. But having said that, I was fortunate because the last Zoom show, I already knew the bride and groom, they were celebrating their anniversary. So it was I could quite quickly develop a rapport with them through using Zoom. Whereas I think if you're using Zoom with people you've not met in the flesh, it takes a little bit longer to build up a rapport in a virtual sense, if that makes sense.
Well, I may well. Yeah. I mean, Tessa Snart, who has now also launched her very own podcast series, Country in the Kitchen.
Doing
various of that. She uses Skype, not Skype, she uses Zoom, but audio only as opposed to visual. So I suppose you do have that option of videos, because there is that slight uncertainty when you have the video. But clearly, if you're doing magic, as we've said before, maybe you do need to have some visual stuff in there as well.
That's right. And a bit of interaction with the audience. But I think you've just got to make sure that it's pretty snappy. I wouldn't be doing magic for more than 30 minutes on a Zoom show.
No.
Because, you know, you don't want to, you don't want people's concentration straying somewhat, Alex. So
and we
it
have
certainly have its merits. There's no doubt about it.
Well, may be one of my guinea pigs when I finally do manage to sort out the Zoom thing.
Oh, yes, of course. We could do a Zoom interaction at some point. I'd be very happy to do that.
We'll just have to wait and see, because I'm in an area that still doesn't have fibre optic stuff, and actually until very recently didn't even have broadband. So we'll just have to work from that. Moving on, David, what thoughts do you actually have for our listener who, in these interesting times, might have been completely taken aback by this whole thing? I think, as we all have been, any particular ways in which you say, well, we will keep on going, we will see it through, we will follow the words of our Her Majesty the Queen, and you know, we will actually get through this? Or is it a case of, you know, we're going to emerge in a world which is going to be considerably changed?
I think things are starting to move a lot now. I mean, I've been very lucky. I've had a bit of been helping out a local charity delivering food and medicine for them throughout the crisis. So it's given me a little bit of structure to my life.
Mm.
What I would say is being creative during times like this, I find very useful. So maybe writing or sketching, reading. I've been reading and having an opportunity to read a lot more than I normally did. But I think just trying to keep yourself busy and not ruminating too much, because during the lockdown, particularly for people who live on their own, I think if you kind of you know, don't keep yourself too active, it could be extremely difficult. In fact, I know it has been very difficult for a lot of people, so I do sympathise with that. But I think being creative is a good thing. I mean, I know you're a very busy man yourself, Alex. Have you been? Well, you always keep yourself busy, but have you been able to interact with students from Middlesbrough? You know, have you been able to mainly do phone links?
The telephone links have been proving useful. So we have, and of course, the email has effectively sort of worked on that premise. I mean, I'm tempted to use the "May you live in interesting times," but with it being a Chinese curse, probably people would say I'm being too political. So we'll just step away from that. We don't want to go to Beijing. No, not this year. Broadly speaking, though, I think things have, you know, certainly considerably changed. The other thing, of course, David, that I'm surprised you didn't mention there, people could always listen to the Midweek Drive, because it is available 24/7 on southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. Just put that shameless plug. And how can people get in touch with yourself, David, if they'd like a Zoom-oriented virtual magic show for their social event?
Well, you can always contact me through Facebook at David Fox Magician. My website is www.magician-midlands.co.uk as well.
There you have it. And as we're right in the middle of the Behind Closed Doors series of events, at least in terms of the English Football League, have you got any thoughts on Scotland in terms of, do you have sympathy for Hearts? Or is it a case of, no, none whatsoever, they should just be sent down straight away?
Well, I know they had that idea that they were going to make three leagues.
Mm.
I think it's a very difficult situation for the league. There's going to be winners and losers. I think you know, if you're at the bottom of the table and you've not been playing too well, it's just unfortunate what has happened. But they will bounce back up. I mean, Hearts will come back up because they're a massive club. So they will come back up. And, of course, Partick Thistle as well have dropped down a division in the second league. They're another big club in Scotland.
Yeah.
So, you know, we can't have too many of the big clubs sliding down, you know, and down the league. But it's good to see football back being played, albeit behind closed doors, as you said, Alex. And certainly, hopefully, we're onwards and upwards. And how about your own team? You had a good result the other night there, didn't you?
Yes. Well, again, we're step by step. There is still that notion of, if you work your magic, David, maybe Liverpool will lose all nine of the remaining matches and things could still work out in an interesting way. But we'll hold fire on that one, I think. As we said, extraordinary times. David, have you been up to Scotland, by the way, yourself since the lockdown started? Or is it a case of, no, I'm in Nottingham. I've been locked down in Nottingham.
I've been in Nottingham this time. I would love to go up and see my dad and my friends soon. So we're just waiting to see. Clearly, they're about 2 weeks behind up there at the moment.
Mm.
So I think it'll maybe be another, you know, maybe even a month or so before I'm able to get up and see them. But have you just been in Middlesbrough all this time, Alex?
This is true. For the longest period in my entire life since the last century, effectively. So
That's right. That's right, because you come down and you stay in the Lincoln area.
That's precisely so. That's not an option. Yeah. Once March the 23rd, 24th actually struck, that was it. But get home and lock into that side of things. So very interesting times. I've said before, and I'll probably say again, I prefer that as opposed to new normal, which is a phrase I try to avoid saying whenever possible, because I think it's a cliche. David, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
As always, it's a pleasure to touch in with you, Alex, and it's been great, yeah.
And can we look forward to connecting with you again in the near future?
Oh, definitely. It's always lovely to come back. Look around your
there something wrong and you can't put your finger on it right then? Roll to me. And I don't think I have ever seen a soul so in despair. So if you want to talk the man through, guess who will be there? So don't try to deny it, pretty baby. You've been down so long you can hardly see. When the engine stalls and it won't stop raining, it's the right time to roll to me. Roll.
Amitri. Rolling to me. Or rolling to whomever. Or just keeping on rolling. Graham Harper, BAFTA award-winning director. Welcome to the programme.
Hello, thank you very much.
It's clearly becoming one of those areas where we're thinking, what do we do? It's National Robotics Week, by the way, this week, Graham. So who would have thought that in the year 2020 we'd be celebrating the fifth National Robotics Week, which is, you know, just joyous in so many ways. So good stuff from that.
The year 2020.
I think it was 2525.
Oh, beg your pardon.
Yeah, never mind. Never mind. Moving on extremely quickly to some thoughts that we were pondering with Sarah Huntley in another part of the production, which was celebrities who've actually opened up Harrods, amongst other things, people who read their own obituaries. Have they ever been invited to open up anything, Graham, in terms of, I mean, clearly you are an awesome celebrity, but we thought, you know, have you ever had the opportunity of cutting the tape on something?
No, or, never.
No?
No. Mm. That would be nice.
Well, maybe.
I've been at a beauty contest, which I think you know about.
Yes, that's very true. Of course, yes. You were one of the judges then.
I was very embarrassed.
Look, if anybody could select the winner of Miss United Kingdom or Miss Yorkshire, whatever it was at the time, I think it would have been your good self, Graham.
Thank you very much.
That's the important thing. But I was intrigued to find, in January 1994, I mean, I wasn't aware that Harrods actually had people opening up their sales.
No, not me.
Yeah, but it was Richard Gere who actually opened up the Harrods sales, followed the year after by Pierce Brosnan in 95, and in 1996, Gerard Depardieu.
My God, they must have been doing a special on his wines.
Well, I mean, you say that, but then the year after that was Goldie Hawn, and I'm not sure whether she's got anything on that point of view. The only person who's actually cancelled in terms of opening up the Harrods sales, the Christmas or the New Year sales, I would say, was Cher. She sadly cancelled after the death of her ex-husband, Sonny Bono. Interesting stuff on that. People who've switched on the Oxford Street lights over the last few years, any sort of guesses in terms of who some people who might have switched on the Oxford Street lights might have been?
I've got a feeling a Doctor Who did it one year, maybe several years, and I have a feeling it was John Pertwee, wasn't it?
I think you're right, although on this particular list we've got Daley Thompson in 1982, and another, so we've got Pat Phoenix, Esther Ranson, Bob Geldof, Derek Jameson, Terry Wogan, Gordon Kay, Linford Christie, Sir Richard Branson, the cast of Coronation Street in 1995.
Gosh.
How do they all fit on the platform?
I don't know.
You see, the flip side of it is, if you're talking about Corrie, Julie Goodyear and Roy Barraclough switched on the 1990 Blackpool Illuminations.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, but the cast of Coronation Street, including Doris Speed. There are people who actually say, who was Doris Speed? She was the original landlady, I believe, of The Rover's Return.
Oh, my gosh.
Annie Walker. And 1983 was when she actually opened up the hall. So, in fact, actually, an awful lot of the folk who actually switched on the Blackpool Illuminations have since ceased to be. They've transcended. Did you have any thoughts that you'd like to share with us about Ian McShane, was it Ian McShane who passed away this week?
Ian Holm,
exactly. See, there we are. He's mixing up his Ians.
All I know, I never met him, I just have seen him in so many things. I remember, waffling, Alien. I remember him and the creature coming out of his body. That was out of his chest. That was horrific, but a terrific performance nonetheless by him. And in anything he did, he was always what people would go and see films because of him, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, again, not necessarily a megastar, but somebody whose face you actually knew. Chariots of Fire, of course, was also cited as one of his greats, and let's not forget the Hobbit, which is wonderful stuff there.
He was good. He was really good in The Hobbit. It was a very lovable character.
Yeah. Well, he was Bilbo Baggins.
Yeah, he was.
Very important. So how has it been going over the last week, Graham? Have you gradually taken a few more steps out with Bernadette, or is it a case of, no, we're still self-isolating?
No, we have crept out and with our masks, and we've gone for a tiny bit of shopping just for necessities, not a big, being in there for an hour and a half or whatever. We really are taking it very carefully, but we have been out to get some fresh air and walk. Although we've got a garden, I mean, we're not stuck in a flat or anything. So, no, nothing exciting, but we have ventured out definitely a bit.
Well, that's the important thing. Now, the masks. Are you a standard blue face mask wearer, or are you a designer mask wearer?
No, standard blue.
Yeah, I'm standard blue. I mean, I thought as an Arsenal supporter, you might have actually gone for red and
white. No, I got black.
Yes, yeah. Well, I suppose there is that line. And do you feel that Mikel Arteta is doing the right thing in terms of David Luiz, or would you say no? We need David Luiz because he's such a skillful defender, giving goals away.
David Luiz.
Really?
Yeah.
Again, you've surprised a whole range of sort of aspects on that, which is just quite amazing. Streaming. Any particular movies or things that you... Are you a Netflix follower? Are you do you have streaming services? In the case of no, I stay with the BBC and ITV if I'm really pushed.
I do stay with them. I don't Netflix. I think there's so many channels playing, and eventually you'll see all the films anyway on some channel, because
But if you're looking at the streaming Five Bloods, the latest Spike Lee, you go straight to Netflix from that point of view. If you go to check out the abomination that many critics have actually said is Artemis Fowl, you go straight to the Disney Plus channel. That window, which, I mean, you must remember, Graham, when there was a notion that there was a window of usually sort of, sometimes it could be up to years before movies went on television. It's now could well be as short as 2 weeks.
In fact, I think they almost show them before they put them on, don't they?
Now, in 2002, which sounds such a long time ago now, to be precise, 18 years, British scientists identified what they called the funniest joke in the world. Would you like me to read you?
I can't wait.
The funniest joke in the world. I will attempt to deliver it with consummate professionalism and a certain amount of aplomb. A couple of New Jersey hunters are out in the woods when one of them falls to the ground. He doesn't seem to be breathing. His eyes are rolled back in his head. The other guy whips out his cell phone and calls the emergency services. He gasps to the operator, "My friend is dead. What can I do?" The operator, in a calm, soothing voice, says, "Just take it easy. I can help. First, let's make sure he's dead." There's a silence, then a shot is heard. The guy's voice comes back on the line. He says, "Okay, now what?" Yeah, I figured that in an era where Fawlty Towers episodes have been pulled, where we've got all manner of other sisters, I thought we were fairly safe on that. I think, as yet, I think we should be okay with that. 2002, officially at that stage, the funniest joke in the world.
Good God.
Yeah. Anyway, let's let's not talk about telephony or other bits and pieces, and let's progress accordingly. Any particular series that you would say people should check out, other than, as I say, I mean, because there must be a lot of Graham Harper director stuff that's actually still around. I mean, I've cited obviously the Doctor Who episodes, any of the David Tennant seasons, superb. Check those things out from that point of view, or indeed the classic Doctor Who. Star Cops, I'm not sure that's being streamed as yet. But are there any other areas which you think actually yes, that should go on there? I mean, I'm thinking one series that has never really had I won't say revival, but it hasn't had the claim it deserved, was, of course, Steel City Blues, River City Blues.
Yeah, still, Steel City, I think.
Steel City Blues, exactly,
yeah,
which,
yeah,
of course, was shot in Middlesbrough. And, you know, one's tried with in vain to find DVD copies and other aspects of that, but, you know.
I don't know, when London's burning, because it was about the fire service,
yeah,
in the northeast, and,
yeah,
and we're petrochemical area and whatever, so it was really going to be full on, and it was.
Mm.
That started production, I think, a couple of years after London's Burning had been taken off the air. The same executive producer who ran ITV drama wanted another fire service series. When we made it, he immediately kind of cancelled another production of it. And yet it was a fabulous series. It wasn't because he thought it was awful. It was because he thought maybe it didn't get an audience. But I thought it was a really, really good series. Very exciting and different from London's Burning. So it was interesting because it wasn't exactly the same. It was a different thing. Well, the fires were the same, but the personnel and what went on and how they all integrated was a really interesting subject.
Yeah. Well, you know, again, maybe sometime in the archives of time they will actually be made available, because they must be there somewhere.
Do you know, Alexis, what was interesting about that was I was dreaming and hoping that someone might give me a chance to do Doctor Who, which started in 2005.
Mm.
But before it went, you know, into production, and I'd done my usual begging, can I come and do some? I didn't hear, and so therefore I thought, that, well, that was it. And I was offered Steel River Blues. So I went to do Steel River Blues, and because I did that, and because it had so much action in it, and adventure and CGI work, I had a huge, fast year's training on how to deal with big action stuff. And so when Doctor Who came along in 2006 for me, which was brilliant, I was nervous of doing it, but I was not afraid of confronting all the big action that Russell T. Davis and any of the writers put into their scripts. I relished it because I had some knowledge of how to go about it.
It shows that the cosmos and the universe, ultimately, it's a friendly place and it works to our benefit.
Yes, absolutely.
Even though sometimes we might think, what is it all about? A couple of little pieces of trivia which might just help you through the next time you're having a family discussion with respect to Bernadette, or indeed Jamie, or any of the fine folk of this basis. The only 15-letter word that can be spelled without repeating a letter in English is uncopyrightable.
Oh, my goodness.
Uncopyrightable. And Knightsbridge, not too far away from yourself, well, Acton and Knightsbridge, kind of stone's throw, really, closer than Middlesbrough. Knightsbridge is the place with the most consonants in a row.
Oh, right.
Yeah, yeah. I'll throw in two more. The Hawaiian alphabet only has 12 letters, and if you're in Albania, there is no Albanian word for headache.
Oh, gosh. So how do they describe what they've got wrong with that?
I don't know, but maybe we can find that out. We'll put it out to the team. Graham, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link as we've gone from Steel River Blues, Steel City Blues, I get the name.
Yeah, Steel River Blues.
Steel River Blues, Doctor Who, lockdown challenges, streaming events and so on, and even touched loosely on the notion of will Gone with the Wind ever return? I don't know.
Oh, it might be good to do a remake.
Well, exactly, where they could possibly have Irish people taking on board all the... No, let's not go there. It's
no,
I know. I just think you need to be underestimated. That's it, Graham. That's it for this week. Will you be back with us next week? Has it been okay for you?
Absolute pleasure. Thank you very much.
Would you like Roger Daltrey and The Who?
Definitely. What we all say. I'm not trying to cause a big sensation. I'm just talking about my generation.
we all I'm trying to cause a big sensation. Talking about my generation. Get around.
Talking about my generation.
Things ain't doing it awful cold.
Talking about my generation.
Yeah, I hope I die before I get old.
Moon certainly got carried away. But then when you actually have David Fox, magician, moving on to Graham Harper, ace director, clearly keeping the Doctor Who connection going, you have to feature the Who to actually connect us to Eloise Sheehan. Who? How are you, Eloise?
I'm good, thank you, Alex. How are you?
Good. Well, welcome back to the Midweek Drive. I really don't know when this is going out on Siren. We'll have to juggle a few things around. Maybe this week, maybe next week. We just have to juggle things around. But it will be online, so you might be listening to this via an online system as well. But we're welcoming back, or hopefully we'll later on today be welcoming back some of our American correspondents and so on. How has it been for yourself, Eloise? Have you been enjoying the last few days since last we spoke? Shocked, clearly, by Graham's revelation that he doesn't have Netflix. I know, I was...
That is crazy, but apparently you don't have a TV, Alex. So.
No, this is true.
Well, are you talking about?
No, when you say I do have a television, but it uses an aerial that actually went offline when analog signal ceased in 2012, I should say. So in terms of actually having a television set that can receive digital, no, although having said that, now that I do have broadband established, I have been able to actually access things that have been screened. And besides, a DVD player keeping solid state media around. And if you do want to actually to have several hundred videotapes, VHS tapes, or indeed whether your mum Sandra would like to have several hundred VHS tapes, there we are, there's an offer, then, you know, it's there to by all means. But I'll keep the DVDs. Yeah. So it does work through that whole process. And not only that, but three streaming services. There we are. A bit of a cockney rhyming server. I strime. Looking to your Amazon Prime, your Netflix, and Disney Plus, if only to see Artemis Fowl. Wow, it's a Fowl movie. It almost says it in the word, Miss Fowl. But, you know, it's so good, I'll watch it twice. It's or bad, just to see Dame Judi Dench. Top of the morning to you. It is. Have you seen Artemis Fowl as yet?
Not yet. I saw it on Disney Plus and just skimmed past it rather quickly.
Oh, it's only 90 minutes. I mean, it's over.
Right.
It's over. The lead actor, you'd be hard pushed to realise that he, I believe, is the grandson of Robert Shaw, great actor, of course, was in Jaws and a number of other things. And it is interesting. Don't watch it if you want to see a lot of Colin Farrell. He's only in it sparingly. But clearly the voice of one of the characters from Frozen. I think it's Olaf, who's Josh Gad, exactly. Nothing like his character, Olaf. Nothing at all. And spoiler alert, but the way that he actually deals with being a giant dwarf and when he tunnels is quite interesting. That's all I'll say. Okay.
I need to watch it just for that now. I need to know.
Yeah, I think you, yes. Robin, earlier in the whole sequence, was saying, so Eloise can actually review the Midway Drive Morning Edition and do various other factors as well. So, I mean, it's up to you, Eloise. Do you want to say, well, that was good, or I just can't stand another session of name, obviously, redacted for personal reasons?
I'm going to admit something.
Yes.
I did not have an intelligent moment and got really confused.
Hmm.
And listened. I don't know which bits were the morning, which bits were the evening Midweek Drive.
Hmm.
It's all mixed up in my head. So
right.
I don't know which bits are what anymore.
Yeah. Well, do you know, that is in so many ways the best way to deal with the whole programme. I mean, you've been in the studio. You know that ultimately the best thing to do is actually see it as a kind of omnipresent, omnidirectional, zeitgeist-fulfilling moment of stuff.
It is.
Yeah. So within that omnidirectional, zeitgeist-fulfilling moment of stuff, which bits were actually there? I mean, hats off to your mum, who actually sort of thanked me for playing the David Cassidy tune. In fact, I've got another David Cassidy tune taken from his very last album, which is a kind of a mini-album, because he only managed to record 5 songs in it before he popped his clogs back in 2018. Oh. And it's Songs My Father Taught Me. Yeah. Anyway, anything capture your ear and you thought, oh, that was quite interesting, I think they should pursue that?
Well, the highlight of whatever was the morning or the evening show was the fact that Ben got Spike's name wrong and called him Spud. That really tickled me, the fact that Ben could just be presenting with a potato, and I think we should follow on to that.
I mean, Spike is looking at me now and he's thinking, yeah, you know, please, you know, enough already, please. But that was quite shocking, I must admit. I mean, how many years
how
is
dare
actually?
He?
Yeah, yeah.
He had 4 years.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's just, you know, I was very tempted when we did the whole feast to actually just refer to him as Zen, you know, like the computer in Blake 7. So, you know, say, well, Zen, what do you think about this? You know, oh, sorry, is it a bit of it? I didn't realise. I thought it was a different letter of the alphabet. But no, I held back. I held back. Well, that, I mean, that's it. You know, who would have thought, you know, so clearly that works its way through the whole process. Anything else?
I think it was the evening, but congratulations to Zoe for passing her degree. That's amazing.
Mm. I noticed you'd congratulated her on Facebook as well, which is nice. In one of those rare forays I actually made into social media, which I try to limit it to, you know, no more than 2 sessions a week on the social media, because, you know, you don't want to get too depressed on this side of things to find out how many people are liking things hither and thither. But yeah, good stuff.
If I sound like I'm not making much sense, I am currently being attacked by a kitten and trying not to.
Mm. Well, then you know what we need to do. We need to name that kitten. What what is the name of your kitten, or if you just decided to call it kitten?
His name is Jack, and he's currently trying to eat my entire hand, so that's wonderful.
Oh, nice. Jack the cannibal kitten, which is...
Yes.
Which I think, you know, we've had Jack the Giant Slayer, so I think Jack the Cannibal Kitten could well be the title of a movie that needs to be reviewed by Robin Pierce in the near future. I'll put it in the same league as Night of the Lepus, which, if you haven't seen Night of the Lepus, Eloise, if only for DeForest Kelly and the giant rabbits, you should actually check
giant
out.
Rabbits?
Giant rabbits.
Great.
Hence, Night of the Lepus. Giant rabbits. Very good. And how has lockdown been treating you as you're based in Lincoln? What kind of experiences have you been getting up to? Or is it a case of, no, I'm still having to deal with my kitten because Jack gets very nervous if I leave the house?
He actually does follow me everywhere. He
yeah.
even gets in the shower. So he doesn't like us leaving the house.
Yeah.
But I don't even know what I've done since speaking to you last week.
Yeah, well, you see, it just blurs in from one thing to the other. The key thing is having some structure, Chloe. Oh, so Chloe. You know, Chloe's...
How
yeah, exactly.
Tell Ben off, the key, and then you just get my name wrong
exactly. completely. The key thing, Eloise, is having some structure. I'll be saying this to Chloe next week when she joins us. That's the key thing. Yeah, have some structure and build on that from there. That would be the important thing. And don't forget, this week, celebrate the fact that it is National Robotics Week.
Yeah. How are you going to be celebrating that, Alex?
Do you know, I haven't decided as yet. I mean, doing the interview with Professor Robert Richardson, Robert, the non-robot Richardson Professor of Robotics at the University of Leeds. Great stuff. But, I think it's a mixture of that and also the fact that it is the Lincolnshire Show. It's the 2020 Lincolnshire Show, which is going to be online and or will have been online by the time this is actually released, or maybe not if you're listening to the Podbean version, which will have gone out earlier. So it's very confusing. It's so many hours this week to be just sorted through. It's just unbelievably wonderful. Eloise, have you got a message you'd like to share with the world before we go into David Cassidy and Night and Day? We'll think about that, shall we? We'll give you 3 minutes and 5 seconds to consider not only David Cassidy from his final album, singing Night and Day, songs his father taught him, and then we'll receive Eloise's message for the world.
Perfect.
Night and day, you are the one. Only you, neath the moon or under the sun. Whether near to me or far, it matters not wherever you are. I think of you day and night. Night and day, why is it so? This longing for you follows wherever I go. In that morning traffic boom, I lie here silent in my lonely room. I think of you day and night. Such hungry yearning burning inside of me, and this torment won't be through till you let me spend my life making love to you.
Stuff. And if you want to keep the Cassidy thing going, you can always check out Green Arrow episodes or Arrow episodes, because Katie Cassidy, David's daughter, portrays Black Canary in terms of that. Flash, I said to myself. No, it's Jack, who's actually been provided as a photograph, because it looks remarkably like my first ever cat. I've only had two, but, you know, first ever was technically Flash. Called Flash, not named after the cleaning product, but because he used to literally flash up and down the curtains and various other aspects as well. Like some sort of...
So you could play the Flash Gordon album at him, really.
No, even though the current edition of SFX magazine, and we must feature Richard Edwards, former editor, on this, he's done a full, I think, 5 or 6 page special on the anniversary of Flash the movie. The saviour of the universe, 40 years. Amazing. So we're still doing his stuff there. We probably would need to follow that through with respect to getting in the dancers as well, which is great stuff.
Nice.
So what are those thoughts, or are the thoughts literally going to be, I did make notes but he wouldn't let me have them, and then it's enigmatic. You know, it's enigmatic in terms of the listener will say, what a profound statement Eloise has come out with this week. I did make notes, but he wouldn't let me have them. It asks so many questions.
I wasn't aiming to sound illiterate and not know what I was doing. I did make notes, but I was being bullied on not having them.
Well, of course, by a teeny kitten. I know. He may be a teeny kitten to yourself, but so he may be a teeny kitten to me because he just looks teeny on the photograph. In reality, he's probably 6 foot. You know, he's a giant cat that's actually there. A giant kitten that's actually around.
Someone at the home.
It's good. In fact, the earlier sort of line that you had there was, let me see, this was, I have a date here, 27th of February, when I have in block capitals, I left my hairbrush! Where is
it? Yeah, that's still in the studio somewhere.
Yeah, well... Good luck with that. We may, by the time it's been through deep clean and various other aspects, who knows, by the time we get to the end of the year, we may be back in there, but I wouldn't hold out any hope at present.
I hope so.
Well, the University of Lincoln is going to be, I think the official line is slowly opening up. All our official start will be October with virtual sessions for open days. We've had the virtual open day, virtual freshers weeks and so on. So interesting times lie ahead for that, as indeed it does for all educational establishments and indeed the world, which is quite profound, really. In fact, it's almost borrowed your sort of statements, really. But never mind. Eloise, have you heard a reasonably interesting... What did you make of David Cassidy in Night and Day, his interpretation of that, by the way?
It's beautiful, but he's not Fred Astaire, is he?
No, well, you know, I was going to get some Fred Astaire at this rate. In fact, I had some Gene Kelly from Brigadoon, but because we had to change things around and you were asleep when we called earlier, I'm sorry, we thought, well, it's okay, we'll go. It's still, at least you got the voicemail message, which proves at least I'd left it on the right voicemail machine, because it's, as you know, Eloise, I am prone to sometimes leaving answer phone messages that have no relevance to the person they're originally targeted at, but, you know, it's just... It's all digits.
We'll have to mix it up.
So have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
I have, thank you.
Will you
thank
be back
you.
With
Sorry,
us?
I've been strange.
Hey, strange is the new normal, as indeed Benedict Cumberbatch might say. Will you be back with us in the very near future?
I hope so.
Thank you. Daylight come and me won't go home. Work all night and a drink a rum.
Daylight come and me won't go home.
Stack banana till the morning come.
Daylight come and me won't go home.
Come, Mr. Tallyman, tally me banana.
Harry Belafonte with the fantastic Banana Boat song, and indeed it's resonant of so many wonderful things, including one of the movies that I believe was being watched by our next guest at the start of lockdown. It is, of course, the phenomenal Rachel Abbott. How are you, Rachel?
Hi, I'm good.
Now, can you remember which movie that comes from? Or was featured in, I should say, was featured in.
American Beauty. Trying to think what films I tweeted about.
Uh-huh. Well, it's nothing to do with
you
your...
You just said I'd watched it at the start of lockdown. Now I'm trying to... Oh, my God, excuse me. Sorry.
Sorry. Such excitement. If I gave you a...
Oh, it landed on me. Sorry.
Oh, yeah, it's all... Well, curious, actually, because that actually ties in with the movie in a very strange and interesting way. It's an awesome movie, originally in 1988, and that was a sequence that was, I suppose, a version of Lip Sync, where the dining guests are effectively possessed and actually...
Yeah, it is... Oh, my God.
No, it's not. No, there isn't a movie. There is, of course, Oh, God and Oh, God Part 2, but no, you know, we got...
I know the film because I tweeted about it.
Yeah.
And I thought it was funny to be watching it in lockdown.
Yeah, exactly.
And now it escapes my mind.
Oh.
And it's so obvious.
It is. How can I help you more? I could say Alec Baldwin. I can see...
Just say the name. I know it. Just say the name of the show.
I can say Gina Davis.
Just say the name of the show.
I can say Catherine O'Hara, Jeffrey... begins with... All right, I'll do what the main character actually does, and we'll do this on radio, because it'll work so well. Charades on radio, okay? So I'm shaping something that looks like a fruit, okay? It's a fruit. I'm looking at something which is not a fly, but it's a bit like a very popular band from Liverpool. A very, very popular band of the 60s.
Beatles.
Yes.
I can't. My brain today is tired. I've literally love that film. I can't, the name just went from my brain.
Yeah, well, you know, it's such a sensational sort of thing. In fact, in many ways, Rachel, I would say this should be your theme. When you actually open up your production work on podcasts and so on, you should simply have Jenny Elfman's music in the background, just, you know, setting up that whole sequence, you know?
Yeah, it sums up my mind.
Yeah, because let's face it, when you're dealing with internet companies, darn those strange and bizarre ways, promising that they're going to give you a telephone call and they're not doing that.
Yeah. Don't want me listening right now, you really let me down.
This is very true.
No shade.
It's milk or otherwise. So, I suspect you weren't even born when Beetlejuice, that horror comedy fantasy film, actually launched.
I don't know, I was born in 1989.
A year afterwards, you see. Clearly, your parents were so impressed by the movie Beetlejuice in 1988, they said, let's have a child. Let's have a child, we'll have a child. We want a child like Winona Ryder, and they got one that's even better, you know.
No.
Rachel is with us, Rachel Abbott, doing her stuff. So yes, 1988, so last century, clearly. Would you say it's almost the perfect movie for lockdown, or would you say, maybe not?
I think it was more the time of day I was watching it. I think it just summed up 2020 and lockdown. I think I was watching it at like 10 a.m. in the morning. On a Saturday or a Sunday.
Yeah.
And it was just like, this actually is just life right now. Life is that weird, I'm watching this film right now.
And just think, if you'd actually selected Tim Burton's first movie, you would have had Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Completely different movie. But never mind. Nightmare Before Christmas, Batman, of course. Beetlejuice, of course, there was supposed to be a sequel. Beetlejuice Goes Hawaiian. And even as long ago as 2015, they were talking about it. Apparently Michael Keaton's up for it, Winona Ryder's up for it. But it still hasn't become reality.
When I was really, really thin, a friend of mine called me the corpse bride. I thought it was a compliment at the time, but I don't think it was.
Yeah, I
have this big hair.
I know we've never met in real life terms, Rachel. But you know, from the images I've seen with yourself and Bean, I think that's harsh. news from Beetlejuice, it won the Academy Award for Best Makeup, it won 3 Saturn Awards, Best Horror Film, Best Makeup, Best Supporting Actress for Sylvia Sidney, sadly passed away a few years ago, indeed there's been an animated series, a stage musical that's been around for that line of things, so yeah, very good movie.
Yeah, I know there is, in Broadway. I think it was on before lockdown.
Yeah.
I think it closed in lockdown, Broadway closed.
You've got to have social distancing. Although it would seem...
non-existent in London.
Yeah, more and more people are actually talking about getting the theatre back on streaming. What's the vibe in London? I mean, do you think there's a case of...
Well, so sad. We need funding. Funding is needed so much so for the arts. Like, it's so frustrating, you know, the only way it's going to survive, you know, is if the funding comes in to be able to, you know, make theatres safe for everyone.
Yeah.
So much, it's so sad. So many people working in the arts have completely been got, you know, put in the dark like a theatre would. And there's so much that comes into the theatre. It's not just the actors and actresses. It's the lighting, the stage staff, the front of house staff, the ushers, the bar staff, the theatre managers, like... There's no date on this yet, and I think streaming has been the best thing, but, you know, it's not the same ultimately, and it's really sad. And when people are spending money on planes, being painted, so much of that money would fund things like that, but I mustn't get political.
Well, I think you did a wonderful job there of actually throwing your hat into the ring to take over from Boris Johnson as the next Prime Minister. And frankly,
Rachel, you
got my vote.
Out of lockdown, as much as I don't believe at all what's gone on, I wouldn't wish it on anyone to happen. But it has just been failed. We've been failed.
Yeah.
Sorry. Gosh, being so political today.
Rachel, you know, this is why, as we've built up this wonderful broadcasting relationship over the years. Yeah, back in the day, Rachel used to be an ace producer who would phone me up, and I always used
to be... I still
am! Yeah, you are, of course. You still are. Exactly.
I think, I hope so.
Yeah,
anyway.
where you are, but you don't normally do that tech bit of phoning and checking that people are actually there. For instance, you know, I knew without fail that you would ensure that lines were perfect, etc. And somehow some of your successors just haven't been in the same Premier League, Rachel. No names, but it's just the fact of the matter. You know, it's just, it happens.
I know.
But even in those days, no matter who the guest might have been, you know, whether they were famous medics, whether they were people who were looking after national cat winning competitions, any of the sort.
They're the best ones.
Any of those systems, you know, never did Rachel actually say, right, time to get political, because she was a professional. That's the important thing. She's professional. She knows where the line is. Rachel Abbott is not going to go down the line of Piers Morgan, thank heavens. Although, having said
that... Although, having said that, he's speaking for the people more than I thought. I never thought I'd say this in 2020, Alex.
I blame watching Beetlejuice. Clearly has opened up a whole
range of... No, I'm not supportive. I'm just saying, like...
Yeah.
He's asking the questions.
This is so true. In Teesside, which is 250 miles north of where you are and about 136 miles north of Lincoln, Teesside International Airport has been chosen as one of 12 venues to host 6 weeks of unique live drive-in entertainment concerts this summer. Yeah. We have got Mike Skinner of the Streets, Cigar.
Wow!
Yeah.
Old school.
Dizzy Rascal. Bonkers. The Kaiser Chiefs, Tony Hadley, Russell Watson, Gary Newman, and the Lightning Seeds.
Tony Hadley.
Yeah. Still going, I know.
Kaiser Chiefs go.
Yeah, well, there we are. I say one of 12 UK venues, and that's happening in August, I believe. We've also talked about the online Newark International Book Festival that's taking place as well. So I suppose there is an online thing, but your point is well made, Rachel, that ultimately we still have a situation where somehow it is going to be really difficult and very challenging, because you make that statement, is the movie or theatrical production worth potentially dying for? Tough call.
Is that a question?
Well, it's just it's a rhetorical question.
Sorry, I thought you were going to a track. It sounded like you were going into a track.
Yeah, I know. It did indeed, but then I looked at that and I see it's Smokey Robinson and Tracks of My Tears, and I'm thinking, no, maybe not.
Not that one.
No.
We need something good, like happy. But what I'm going to say, you know, the Globe in London's at risk.
Mm, yeah.
Hugely. So much culture is at risk, and to save that, we need more diversity, and we need funding to bring it back better than it was even before.
Yeah. There we are, you see. That's what happens when Rachel can be basically stirred up by such annoyances as trying to get your broadband sorted out. I sort of echo what you've been, and in the end I managed to install it after a fashion when BT, other companies obviously are available, sent me the stuff.
I haven't had broadband or a landline for a month.
So why is this then, Rachel?
Because a sports car drove into the box in the street. The driver was not harmed. But there are people in the area who are vulnerable and clearly haven't had a landline.
Yeah.
And I've really struggled producing a show without Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
But it's fine.
Yeah. Because ultimately there's the power of Rachel Abbott to the hand there, which is very good, very important. We will be sorting out a whole range of other factors, but Rachel, it has been splendid touching base with you.
Oh, my tummy just rumbled. Splendid to speak to you too, Alex.
that's very, very important. I was just wondering if we can leave you with a few sort of little thoughts to maybe actually work our way through this.
Have you got the Streets in your system?
Do you know, we don't.
What can I pick? I want to pick a song.
Well, go on then. What would you like? And there's no guarantee that we'll have it, but, you know, we can always try.
Well, I'm going through the bands that you mentioned before to make it relevant.
Hmm.
So you don't have the Street?
No.
Do you have any of those bands?
Let me just see. I feel sure if I'm way off base here, we must have some Dizzy Rascal. Astonishingly, we don't even have any Dizzy. I've obviously been most remiss in loading stuff here in all sorts of ways here. Maybe we can actually, in appreciation...
Well, I predict a riot.
Do you know, that would be very good. We do have the band that Tony Hadley used to actually front with Gold. That's, of course, Spandau Ballet, although they don't speak to each other these days.
I'm not feeling very gold today.
No, I appreciate that, so we'll take that out from there. Let's see if we've got Kaiser Chiefs that actually are in mind there from the... You know, we do actually have I Predict a Riot or Ruby.
Do that.
how the world feels right now.
Because, well, yeah. Do you know, that is quite political, and we would obviously say we don't endorse in any way, shape or form the suggestions or opinions of many of our contributors. True, though, they might
I'm predicting one.
Yeah.
I'm predicting one if I don't get Wi-Fi back.
That's, and if you are a Wi-Fi provider looking to actually incur the wrath of Rachel Abbott, then beware. Because remember, she has Beetlejuice on her side, and she will say the name three times. And strange things will emerge. That's
I'm
all
too scared to jinx myself. 2020 has been hard enough, Alex.
Yeah, well, so have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today, then?
I have. It's been really fun.
And will you be back with us again at a similar kind of time next week or thereabouts?
Yes.
Marvellous. Here are the Kaiser Chiefs. Philosophical musings from Serge and the rest of the Kaiser Chiefs there with predicting a riot and obviously the recommendation of Rachel Abbott, who, well, I'm sure she'll get broadband before too long. Mind you, a month without broadband, bit of a challenge. It's a bit like several months without the wonderful dulcet tones of North Carolina correspondent extraordinaire Jessica Burtis. How are you, Jessica?
Good, how are you?
Excellent. Welcome, Jessica. And you do actually have the official title now of being one of our first ever transatlantic contributors in this newly relaunched, repackaged system of the Midweek Drive. Before we go over to California and speak to regulars like Arthur Weingarten, Annette, Andre, Phil Leonis, and others. So welcome back on board the show. And clearly we need to ask, because we're going to be speaking to Eleanor Flart in the near future. Eleanor, who is from Seattle. And Eleanor, like yourself, was an exchange student, but Eleanor was actually at a different university. And because she missed the last few flights, she actually ended up having to stay in lockdown in England, in Stokesley, with her friend, literally until a couple of weeks ago. So months and months went by when she was just unable to get back to the good old land of the US of A. What about yourself, Jessica? I know you cut it. It was a bit tight, you know, when we were last in the studio, and who knows when we'll ever get back in the studio again, in terms of together. Share with us your adventure in terms of getting back to the United States.
Oh, it was a crazy 24 hours. I was traveling for 24 hours fully. It was a really crazy flight. I've never seen people really like that. We had people in hazmat suits coming onto the plane once we landed to check us, and it was very scary, but I was very happy to be home and safe. I wasn't sure that all my flights were going to work, but they all came through perfectly, and my parents didn't want me flying anymore, so they just we drove for hours. They came to my airport, so
and
yeah, it was
I suppose there's a certain badge of honor in terms of saying that Brazil are kind of going up the league table now, but it's effectively America and Britain that have the highest incidences of COVID-19 deaths. Is this a case of inept leadership, or is it a case of, well, what the hey, you know, at least we're leading the world in this particular aspect?
I think that there are definitely some preventative measures that weren't really paid attention to. I can still remember right before I left England, we were still going out to restaurants, which probably was not the best idea. But there were a bunch of people doing the same. And coming back to the U.S., it really depends where you are in the country. I think at least in the U.S., people are very friendly with each other, so they love to hug and to shake hands and to be very close to one another. So I think the culture just kind of promoted it to spread a bit easier here.
In terms of where we go, of course, we could always use the Star Trek Idic salute, the Vulcan aspect of, which is a kind of the equivalent of a bow. Handshakes, they're not going to work at all. I think you coined the phrase, if memory serves, when we were last doing live Midweek Drives, I think you coined the phrase of the bubble of isolation.
Yes.
Personal bubble time, which was great, with a whole heap of very unhealthy sweet tea concoction that you'd introduced us to, but we need to work through that. And little did I realise when I was actually doing the historical session of Introduction to Communications, or Communications in Society, I would say, that the plague would have actually sort of greeted you as a kind of AV exercise, your kind of genuine exercise that we'd actually say, we have to have the plague. Who would have thought it? You know, amazing.
There we go.
Yeah. So somehow I think there's time where teaching aids can be a little bit too extensive.
A little hint.
Heading towards online tuition, of course, in the next academic year, we're looking at delivering lectures online, virtual aspects from that. What's the situation at your own college in the States? Have they given you instructions, or is it a case of come back, everything's going to be perfect?
It's a mix of both, I think. My university was very slow in their response to me leaving the UK as well. And they've been very vague about what's happening next semester. But at the moment, they're saying just to come back to university and that we may have larger classrooms to help social distance people, and some lessons might be online. But they're not really doing much else. So I still have a spot in a dorm. We'll see.
it's an interesting and shall we say somewhat scary time that I don't think any of us were expecting.
Yeah.
But at least it means it's memorable, and you can always actually share the notions that you're one of the pioneers of coping with the COVID-19 crisis. So that's something which is
yeah.
worth saying. It's always nice to hear, obviously, from yourself, Jessica, and the fact that you've been listening to the Midweek Drive, which, even though we're recording them, so they're not going out live, so these particular ones mm-hmm. will be out in the following week, and we have to juggle various other factors around as well. It's nice to see that and of course your mum is still sort of listening to the whole thing, so we're keeping bonded on that basis.
She's a little loyal.
Yeah, exactly. And I presume you were also in the States when the Commander-in-Chief actually suggested, although he claims it was just being ironic, that we should actually take disinfectants. Joe Biden or the incumbent, I don't know. Very interesting times, but we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah.
And looking towards the other sort of element that we're seeing, because clearly the other elements which address the riot elements as well from that point of view, the Black mm-hmm. Lives Matter system, I mean, has that been scary? I mean, as somebody who's obviously now living in the States, do you think, oh, Lord, what's happening now? Is it the end times? Should we actually just all move back to Lincoln?
My parents have been joking about that, but I do think it's a bit of a good and bad thing. It's very bittersweet because I think that, you know, it's terrible that these things are happening, that there's so many instances of police brutality that affect so many people. But I think it's, I guess, a silver lining now that it's being brought to light more. And I hope that the momentum will keep going because I'd love to see more of a change. It definitely is an overlooked issue. And one that's been going on for so long. So it's hard to see, but necessary.
And in North Carolina, and as we know, you live in I think one of the smallest towns in North Carolina, and sort of based there, it's just one high street and so on. Have you been under lockdown conditions? Has it been a case of you need to maintain your social distance? Are you wearing masks when you go out? What's the situation?
Yeah, so every time we go out, we wear masks. It hasn't been state mandated that you have to wear the masks so far, but it's definitely social pressure now. People will kind of get dirty looks if they don't, so everyone's been wearing them. But North Carolina is more on severe lockdowns than South Carolina, which is kind of like our little cousin to the South, so we're being a bit more careful. I think they're having more cases down in South Carolina, so North Carolina is definitely keeping its measures in place. Very, very little places are fully open. It's very different.
Well, as you're aware, clearly no Midweek Drivettes in the studio, but we do have, of course, wonderful namesake, Jessie, from, of course, Toy Story, the saga. She's with us.
Yay.
Spike is with us as well. And indeed, Northern Memory Surfs are back in my office in Lincoln, which I haven't been into since March 23rd, 24th, because obviously we had to leave there. There will still be your flowers. So that's all nice then. They probably won't be in a fit state as and when I actually return, which could well be end of August, September. But, you know, in terms of that, at least they're still there. Who knows? At least they're sorting through with it. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, yeah, I kind of figured when the whole thing, and it occurred so rapidly here that we literally, from the 23rd to the 24th, suddenly the button was pressed. We had the announcement from the Prime Minister and we were under strict lockdown. So clearly it was back up to Middlesbrough for myself, a little bit bigger than North Carolina, but, you know, not in so many ways. But it's a bit like an American town. In fact, many people will say that Middlesbrough has a kind of almost American feel to it in places. But one of these days, maybe if we can actually sort of get some sort of transport, you can come over again. You know, that's important. But
I would love to.
Yeah. As it stands, we just have to use the medium of the web and telecommunications to stay in touch with colleagues across the base. And this is just one of those examples where hopefully you will be there. So, first of all, Jessica, delighted that you're back to peak fitness, or in fact that you're okay and you're safe and well from that point of view. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic return to the Midweek Drive?
Yes, I definitely have.
And can we look forward to connecting with you again, possibly in about a week's time, in the very near future? Will you be back for that?
Yes, I would love to so much.
There we are, you see. JB, not just James Bond, but Jessica Burtis as well. You see, it all works in every sense of the word. So Jessica Burtis will return. Music, any particular music style that you'd like us to dig out for your good self? I mean, we have new music and Living by Numbers, which you'll never have heard of, but any particular aspects you'd like to go for? Would you like some Neil Diamond? Would you like some Nelly? Would you like some Neon Jungle? What would you like?
Anything fast and fun. It's the morning. I got to start it off fun.
Well, in which case, Limping by Numbers from the 1980s, that's the 1980s, not the 1880s, might just do the trick. Just numbers. We're more than that. We're living in a dystopian science fiction theme. I don't know. Maybe it's all the fault of Beth Gulliver. Welcome back, Beth Gulliver.
Oh, I hope it's not my fault. Hello, how are you?
Well, it's been so many months since last we spoke and you decided to trek around the world before it was shut down with COVID-19. Timing.
I did.
Timing was ever one of your skill sets, Beth. So well done in terms of that. Gulliver's Travels, I know. Awesome stuff. Share with, because you headed off indeed to the Far East and to Asia, I believe. So you might have gone into one of the high spots there. I don't suppose you purchased any bats from any wet markets there, did you?
Gosh, I didn't. So it's not my fault. That's no one can blame me, okay?
Yeah, well.
Oh, go on, sorry.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, just to put that on the line, we want to make it clear on the record with respect to the World Health Organization and other elements. Beth Gulliver did not, I repeat, did not. She's not patient zero. She's not responsible for COVID-19. So,
Thank you for that disclaimer.
Yeah, that's very true. So talk us through what you've been up to since you graduated, 2 years ago now?
Last September? So what's that?
September 2019.
Yes, that's the one. So what have I been doing? I moved to Cardiff, and I've been teaching children in China remotely from home. So I've been working as like a teaching English as a foreign language tutor.
Right.
Which has been really fun. And then I've also done some freelance writing, but I've just recently applied to do a master's in news journalism because I think that's going to be more something that I'm interested in.
Which, as I've gone on record as also saying, the University of Cardiff will be privileged and honoured beyond measure to actually know that they can welcome your good self, Bethany Gulliver, to their
thank
ranks.
You. It's very good. Thank you. I hope so. I had my interview on Friday. It seemed to go okay. I need to wait and see, though.
Remember, you're interviewing them as much as the reverse of the whole system.
Very true, very true.
Very important. You've got to feel that it's right. Curiously, then, you would have been the last cohort to actually graduate in Lincoln Cathedral because this year it's all online, our graduation ceremony.
Oh, gosh. Oh, that's such a shame. It was so wonderful in the cathedral. It's such a good day. Yeah. That's such a shame for them.
Well, you know, we might have a service in some way, shape or form in 2021, but who knows? As somebody who did the science fiction class with me, little did we realise that that was clearly paving the way for this dystopian world in which we live. You know, you probably think, yeah, you're probably thinking it's like Naomi Alderman and the Power all over again. It's like The Handmaid's Tale. It's come to life.
Oh,
you know, I'm living through it.
It's crazy, isn't it? It does feel like a science fiction novel.
Well, I mean, it was about, I think, estimates little over 14 months ago when we were delighting in the awesomeness of Brian Blessed and Sam Jones and others at the convention. It was actually the Sci-Fi Weekender held in Sheffield. Who would have thought that we'd actually be in this in this situation? And whether we ever get back to that again, I don't know, because presumably you've also got, I mean, when you start your postgraduate course, that'll also be delivered, I would expect, by blended learning.
Yeah, so they've said basically that there's about two modules that they physically can't do in the classroom, so we'd have to do, up until at least December, we'd have to do online, yeah? So that'd be very weird, yeah, very weird. Oh, but
very, very strange. From the other interesting news front, in the next week or so, we'll be welcoming back, Abby LeMay from Canada. She's to be online.
Oh, I love Abby.
Well, you know, you'll have to keep downloading the podcasts and you'll be able to hear
definitely.
In full force. But I need to put another little question to you, Beth. We were quite shocked, actually, when we put this to... Well, actually, Ben volunteered this, and both Eloise and myself were somewhat disappointed in terms of Ben's response. Now, can you, Bethany, remember the name of the official Midweek Drive mascot that usually accompanies us on all of the keys?
Hammy!
Well, after a fashion, yes, but he's not our main... There is indeed Hammy the Hamster, and Hammy still does great stuff, but he's not the prime, he's not the captain of the whole thing. There's another sort of aspect, whom Ben actually referred to completely incorrectly as Spud.
I have no idea who he's on about.
I said exactly the same. Now... I believe, and after 4 years of actually having working with us on in terms of this, he might have at least acknowledged that, of course, we're referring to Spike.
Oh, of course. Okay, yes, yeah. Spike, yes. He's... I just have very vivid memories of the hamster, and that's clearly scarred me for life.
Yeah, the hamster, for reasons that clearly he tends to be a bit like the proverbial Marmite that some people rate him.
He really is.
Yeah, other people can't. Whereas Spike, on the other hand, he's smiling because at least he realises that you do remember.
Of course.
Yeah. It was important that we did acknowledge that it was Spike as opposed to Spud. It created huge amusement, apparently, when Eloise actually heard Ben refer to him as Spud. I don't know why. But, you know, these are the things
Eloise.
That... Yeah, she's still in Lincoln, and she has a 4-foot cat. I'm Josh, of course. It's just a kitten called Jack, who actually looks 4-foot in the photograph. Never mind.
Oh, amazing.
not sure whether he's a socially distanced cat, or whether indeed they should actually be using metric measurements, or whether it's actually imperial measurements because of Brexit issues. It could be any of those things. And as we know that with Eloise, we thought we'd ease back from putting those poignant questions to her, because frankly, she's still having to recover from the notions of going into Flash, Saviour of the Universe, played ad infinitum on a radio. Yeah, it's not going to happen. So, I mean, we talked about, obviously you were delivering English as a foreign language via technology, but did you travel abroad and overseas?
Yes, I did. So, just after I finished the course. I graduated in September, but obviously finished at university in, I think it was about May. And then about this time last year, at the end of June, me and my boyfriend, we went to, first of all, Vietnam, then Tokyo, then Fiji, then Hong Kong.
Now, going to Vietnam, of course, immediately calls to mind the latest Spike Lee movie, now streamed on Netflix, Da Five Bloods. Did you actually consider being... Da Two Bloods, because you could have actually worked through that. It would have been a nice sort of way of, you know, Bethany and her boyfriend, Da Two Bloods. Probably worthwhile looking at. I will warn you, Bethany, lots of F-bombs in, as you'd expect from a Spike Lee movie, in Da Five Bloods. So, you know, unless, if you're sensitive to excessive Anglo-Saxonisms coming across here, and let's face it, most people are, although they might not admit to it, then beware. But other than that, all's well with the world.
Thank you for the warning.
I'd also sort of share that, even though it doesn't... I think we do have Judi Dench actually using the S word in her incarnation as a leprechaun chief in the Disney Plus Artemis Fowl, which, again, is a movie I'm suggesting. If you feel that you've got 90 minutes that you wish to actually have a perusal through what has generally been regarded as one of the worst movies ever, then check out... Artemis Fowl. Whether or not you've actually accessed the original Owen, I think it's Owen Telfer books or the original novels that the thing was based on. We spoke to Hannah Brown a bit about that in another show and so on. So you now actually join Robin Pierce as being our second Welsh correspondent, technically.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, I mean, there's Robin, who will review the shows on a weekly basis, come back, develop various other things. Being in Cardiff, and it's the University of Cardiff that you're at, because, yes, I have actually, in times past, been a supervisor for PhD students, but I think at the University College Wales, which is based also in Cardiff. So that's,
nearby. Yeah.
Tragically, I don't think you've got a Doctor Who exhibition. Well, certainly not now, but although I think they were talking about maybe opening it up again. So, you know, I don't know. But then again, you know, who knows? What have you made of Cardiff? Is it something which you think, I suddenly feel my Welshness coming out in me?
Oh, I don't know about that. But it's nice. It's really nice. It feels like a very safe city, which I like. Like, I feel like I can walk around and be absolutely fine. And there's so much culture there. There's lots of different things to do. The parks are really pretty. I do like it there. Yeah, it's really nice.
Well, there we are. So we can look forward to Beth's insight into the cultural aspects of Cardiff in lockdown, in ease of lockdown, because clearly being under the Welsh government, you have slight changes. You're not really allowed. You can't move 5 miles away. You need to work through that and might be eased. We don't know. Very strange. But still, life continues. Beth Gulliver, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
I've had a wonderful time. Thank you.
And... now that we've decided, well, we've managed to identify, and Eloise, as I said, sighs of a relief here, that A, you are still alive, and B, you haven't actually cast us to the pit of the bottomless Dante's Infernos that we were thinking.
Oh, never.
Well, never. Well, yeah, exactly. Will you be able to return in the not-too-distant future?
I would love to. That would be perfect.
Hurrah!
Lisa likes brandy and the way it hits her lips. She's a rock and roll survivor with pendulum hips. She's got deep brown eyes that have seen it all. Working at a nightclub that was called The Avenue, the barman used to call her Little Lisa Looney Tunes. She went on almost anyone. From the hard time living till the Chelsea days, from when her hair was sweet blonde till the day it turned gray, she said, L-I-F-E-G-O-E-S-O-N. You got more than money and sense, my friend. You got heart, and you go in your own way. L-I-F-E-G-O-E-S-O-N. What you don't have now will come back again. You got heart, and you go in your own way. Like a map on their face. And Joey was an artist just living out a case. But his best word was his letters home.
Extended works of fiction about imaginary success. When chorus girls and neon were his closest thing to friends, but to a writer, the truth is no big deal. And from the hard time living to the sleepless nights and the black and blue body from the weekend fights, he'd say, L-I-F-E-G-O-E-S-O-N. Got more than money and sense, my friend. You got heart and you're going your own way. L-I-F-E-G-O-E-S-O-N. What you don't have now will come back again. You got heart and you're going your own way. On my last night on earth, I won't lift to the sky. Just breathe in the air and blink in the light. On my last night on earth, I pay a high price to have no regrets and be done with my life. L-I-F-E-G-O-E-S-O-N. Got more than money and sense, my friend. You got heart and you're going your own way. L-I-F-E-G-O-E-S-O-N. What you don't have now will come back again. You got heart and you're going your own way. L-I-F-E-G-O-E-S-O-N. Got more than money and sense, my friend. You got heart and you're going your own way. L-I-F-E-G-O-E-S-O-N. What you don't have now will come back again. You got heart and you're going your own way.
Hey there, everybody. I'm filmmaker, podcaster, California State Certified Violence Prevention Specialist, and podiatrist to the stars, Phil Lernis. And I've been proud to be a U.S. cultural correspondent for Alex Lefchuk's Midweek Drive program for many years now. And I congratulate you, dear listener, on having found this oasis of podcast audio magic in the cosmos. Or on your internet-equipped mobile device. Or your computer.
It's all down to the technology, really. But thankfully, certain things remain constant, such as the absolute professionalism and general quality and unmitigated joy and happiness that we can actually bring to the world when we say those two, three or indeed four words, Annette Andre and Arthur Weingarten, welcome back to the Midweek Drive.
Yes.
It's a pleasure.
Long anticipated phrase.
Yes.
Well, I think we were actually working on the premise of we would wait until Boris Johnson's Prime Minister rating went down to -7% after his high of +38%. So we thought let's go with this and bring back Arthur and Annette because the world needs their voices. Which is very good.
Absolutely. Well, we're celebrating today that Trump's first rally for the year, where he's invited everyone who wants to go to Oklahoma. No masks are to be worn, and he is expecting, as he says, a million people. But there's going to be quite a lot, all cheek to jowl, inside and outside. Isn't that great to come from a president?
But I must give him this. He is a showman. He has a perfect sense of timing. Oklahoma this week has reached the highest 19 number of cases. The hospitals are starting to be overrun.
Yes.
So he knows exactly how to pack the house.
It is extraordinary. I mean, in every sense of the word. I mean, I'm tempted to actually use the classic, may you live in interesting times, but as that was a Chinese curse, as I said, I don't want to be accused of sending any pointers or signals at all.
But did you ever think in a million years when Berlusconi was on scene that someone could be more of a cancerous buffoon than that one?
I mean, well, I mean, you know,
Trump once again tops him.
I mean, clearly, I mean, John Bolton's memoir, in terms of Donald's desperately trying to curry favour, apparently, with the Chinese president and so on, it's extraordinary. And we also have the news that the pandemic may be getting worse in the United States, as opposed to getting better.
Yeah, there are 19 states now that have had spiked rises higher than they ever had before.
So we're
in lockdown for the Sophia, the next century, I think.
Were talking earlier to one of our exchange students from North Carolina. I think you've spoken to her as well, Jessica, who managed get over to the states. Last sort of flights that was over there, but apparently South Carolina is in lockdown as well. North Carolina still having challenges with this. Apparently, Vice President Mike Pence has said that the fears are all overblown, and it's the grim predictions of the media that are being used to scare the American people. So,
they're all saying that.
In fact, he had a call to governors all over the country, trying to sell them on the idea of saying it was fake news, and that didn't go over too well.
I mean, I suppose you could say on the plus side, America has been made great again in the numbers game of people actually have passed away because of coronavirus, because you're top of the league. I think it's only the United Kingdom and Brazil.
He actually said something like that at one point.
Yeah, he did.
He congratulated it was extraordinary how we have topped the charts.
He actually did. I mean, I'm choking when I hear it and thinking that I'm living in a country where we have somebody who can actually say that.
Yeah.
I never thought that would ever happen. Yeah. There we are.
And recently, of course, we sadly lost Dame Vera Lynn, 103 years of age. She's headed off from that.
Yes. I actually know her daughter, Virginia. I knew Vera. Because we worked together for several years with the SOS. I don't know whether it's still alive or not, the SOS. The STARS Organization for Spastics. And we used to raise a lot of money, and we kept several homes and, you know, facilities going. I think there were three. And during the years, it had various people, including Roger, who was chairman of it for a couple of years, and John Mills, who was chairless, and Anthony Quayle. I mean, a lot of people worked for that. We did it, you know, as spare time. We weren't paid for it or anything. We did it for, and it was wonderful. We had shows or oh, God, my mind.
No, I mean, I'm just thinking, actually, I will not rest, Annette, until we actually have Dame Annette André on the official honours list in the not-too-distant future, because Where Have I Been All My Life needs a sequel. I think Dame Annette André, it slots together. You know, you've got Dame Judi Dench, Dame Vera Lynn, Dame Annette André. Yeah, I think it would work. It would work from that.
It works.
So
it's got a sort of ring to it.
It's extraordinary.
Oh,
so what has been the typical Weingarten household line in terms of lockdown. I mean, obviously the pets are there. I mean, are groceries delivered? Is it a case of California gradually works through? What's the procedures you've been going through?
Thank goodness we have all that, because I sit at the computer, and it started off when it first started. I wasn't used to it, really. I sat at the computer for about 2 days trying to work out how you got on to and ordered all the stuff, which I eventually did, sorted it out with a couple of supermarkets. And it takes forever because you've got to look at the product as each one comes up, and then it says it hasn't got it in stock and various things like that. But it takes a long time. I finally got used to it. And what we do now is we write out a list, and then I sit down at the computer and spend however much time and just do it. We go for pickup, curbside pickup.
Oh.
No one comes, you know, we just phone when we get there and tell them our names. Oh, yes, we'll be right out for you. You leave the boot door open. They come down, they put it in the boot for you, close it up, and off you go. And that is our day out. We have a...
Yes, but...
that is our big social time.
But you can imagine, Alex, that if it were left up to me, I would have expired from starvation 2 months ago.
This is certainly something that I've been chuntering on about, because I, up until very recently in my domestic situation, didn't have any broadband at all. So there was no way of actually connecting with the... Well, there was, but it was limited. It was problematic. I've recently actually managed to get broadband installed, so we have connected. We've had challenges in terms of virtual meetings, in terms of connecting with other folk. Clearly, from a professional point of view, the university line has, which I've had to give priority to, is very much delivering blended learning and producing things. And blended learning effectively means lectures are all delivered online, and we may in October possibly begin to introduce some limited seminar face-to-face contact sessions. As you both know, for these programs, we normally have 3, 4, 5 several people in the studio. Midweek drive-outs,
yes.
Gone completely. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
It's interesting insofar as on the plus side, clearly we have faith that I will gradually put all the bricks together and produce stuff which actually works. So it's still going out, and in theory, this particular piece should be going out probably around about 6:15 or thereabouts, or maybe 6:20 on Wednesday. The 24th.
Oh,
we'll have to put that on Nitz Facebook.
Yep.
Yes.
Well.
Yes.
And you know, but it will be released on podcast, so obviously the Podbean system will be there. But again, it's one of those challenges that you're working through. Huge sympathy in that, because somebody even hacked into your Facebook account. Oh no, you're into your website account, which I've managed to pick up on after the crime had been committed and indeed solved from that point of view.
What do you mean? I don't understand.
I think when it was a time a month or so ago when your website went all peculiar, and you attempted to actually go to your website, and strange things were beginning to happen. I think it's all been sorted
and it
now.
Was Facebook. Facebook was weird. I couldn't get on. I took 3 Apple techs to be able to sort it out. It turned out to be, I don't know. It didn't turn out to be a big thing.
Well, my point being, echoing Arthur's line, that it's not just digitally disadvantaged folk who have challenges with this. We're not in many ways ready to instantly switch everything over to an online virtual world, but never mind.
But you know what I find, being computer ignorant, what I find fascinating in a very positive sense, I don't know if you have the same thing over there, but there have been concerts, full Beethoven Second, that have been done by individual musicians in their home and put together by a group of the people, so that you have a screen with maybe 60 little segments of violins, the entire repertoire, and they are all playing the symphony.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Extraordinary.
Fabulous.
Absolutely extraordinary.
Is causing quite a lot of creativity, I think, for many people.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I find that just extraordinary and overcoming something in the highest sense of the word. These people refuse to not be heard. And I think that's wonderful.
And certainly you'll be pleased to know that as far as this program is concerned, we have been featuring musicians who've been doing just that, actually, from the point of view of actually doing concerts at home and so on. So Tallulah Randall joins us next week. And indeed, Carrington McDuffie, her latest song, was actually composed, written and delivered under lockdown. So it is working. And talking of songs, let's take a mini musical break. If you stay with us, I'm going to give you a choice, Annette, because I think you need to be music producer for this. We can either go for the television theme to May Gray, the original BBC version, which could be quite interesting.
Right.
Alternatively, Dame Vera Lynn and When They Sound the Last All Clear. Which one do you want to go for?
Yeah, Vera Lynn.
I didn't say it was going to be an easy choice, but I think you made it, so in the end.
Happy, my darling, will be. up the lights and the dark, lonely nights are only a memory. Nevermore we'll be apart. Always together, sweetheart. For the peace bells will ring and the whole world will sing when they sound the last all clear. We've got our troubles and we've got our cares, but as long as we keep smiling through, there'll come a day when the clouds roll away and the sun will be shining anew. When they sound the last all clear, how happy my darling will be. When they turn up the lights and the dark lonely nights are only a memory. Nevermore we'll be apart. Always together, sweetheart. For the peace bells will ring and the whole world will sing when they sound the last all clear.
Indeed. We just need the all clear to really have that wartime enthusiasm going past us now. It's very good.
I have to say something, Alex, which shows that I'm not a flag waver. Do you know that not a single word of her passing was here on our television sets? Not from any of the networks or
BBC,
only
then.
BBC, of course, carried it. Not a single thing.
Yes, I know.
Yeah.
I find that extraordinary.
Yeah, just incredible.
A little sad. And also from the world of entertainment, we lost Ian Holm has also passed away.
Yes, we know that.
Never mind. I mean, it just shows they've had enough with respect to Trump and Putin and Johnson. They just said, we can't take it anymore. We're off. Something like that. We need you. We need you to stay. Now, let's talk a little bit about May Gray, because I wanted to do this having recently accessed, because of another program that we actually put together, the very, very first May Gray novel. And I was wondering, as indeed, Arthur, as you know, we've debated over the years, Rowan Atkinson, completely miscast. We should have actually gone for something completely different. You know, Richard Harris, fine, let's go for Rupert Davis. All the folk have actually... Indeed, I think even Michael Gambon's portrayed May Gray in time as of the sort of sequence. So this wonderful French detective, his first ever novel, Peter the Latvian. And I thought
May
I just...
May I correct you?
Yes, please.
Belgian, not French.
Belgium, you're quite right. Yes, Belgium. Like Poirot, I was thinking they can't both be. Surely Belgium isn't big enough to have two investigative detectives. But it is.
Simenon made them both Belgian.
I think Agatha Christie looked after
a wicked sense of humour.
Yeah. Well, it is, and it's the first time I've read a novel of May Gray, and I was intrigued insofar as this was the first ever novel, which is defined as follows. Not that he looked like a cartoon policeman. He didn't have a moustache, he didn't wear heavy boots, his clothes were well cut and made of fairly light worsted. He shaved every day and looked after his hands. But his frame was proletarian. He was a big bony man. His firm muscles filled out his jacket and quickly pulled all his trousers out of shape. He had a way of imposing himself just by standing there. His assertive presence had often irked many of his own colleagues. In Simenon's first novel featuring May Gray, the iconic detective is taken from grimy bars to luxury hotels as he traces the true identity of Peter the Latvian. Also published as The Case of Peter the Left and May Gray and the Enigmatic Left. When you first fell in love with the character of May Gray or started producing it, did you go back to source material, Arthur? Did you think, I'd want to check this out? Or was it a case of, no, the way of Hollywood is we actually forget intellectual property, we take the line and make our own version?
No, I used to read the novels, and I always loved them, because Simenon had an immediacy to his writing. What you just described, this man's character was told through his physical stature. He was a journalist first, Simenon, and he learned to write under a deadline pressure. So he quickly saw things that would work for a novelist. And I don't know if you are aware of this, one of the most telling things about him is that he never took longer than 3 weeks to write any one of the novels.
Which is one of the reasons why he actually wrote 391 titles. 391 titles, 75 books featuring May Gray, translated in more than 50 languages, and, fun fact for both of you, the second most translated author of all time in Italy, after Shakespeare.
That's wonderful.
So, interesting. P.D. James, who actually, when she was here, before she passed on, she actually was a fine contributor, a writer who, more than any other crime novelist, combined a high literary reputation with popular appeal. So, good stuff there. It's nice to actually sort of consider that. Annette, are you a crime fiction aficionado? I mean, clearly.
I love crime fiction. That's what I read all the time. I've got lists of people, and Arthur looks out for things. P.D. James, I love, absolutely love, and I've read pretty much all of Simenon. Haven't I, Arthur?
Yes, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I've got my sort of bunch of favorites, which go from pretty heavy crime to very lightweight, and I like to put those in sometimes just for sort of light relief, but I'm also very particular about the writers. If they don't grab me in the first couple of chapters, sometimes even the first page, that's it, I've had it. Because if I like, you know, good writing. And there are a lot of crime writers who are hacks, I think.
Yeah.
You know,
like journalists, very, perhaps, but never mind.
yes, I mean, there are some I've looked at and read and a bit of, and I thought, my goodness, how, and some very, very popular ones. I can't believe they're so popular. Because they're terrible writers.
It's an interesting line. Maybe we'll send you a copy of our very own contributor, Jenny Finch, and see what you make of her crime writing, which is quite interesting, because that's another line entirely. Have you managed to read Peter the Latvian, then? Did you read the first ever Inspector May Gray, or is that also not as yet crossed your path?
No, I haven't. Oh. Heard of that one, like, well, Arthur, I haven't. Well, he's heard of it, but I haven't even heard of it.
Well, no. As I say, it's very eminently reachable via the internet, and we may well sort of recommend that, or we'll get something else sorted out from that point of view. It's great stuff.
I might even be able to, because I go online and search books and things.
Wow.
There may be a book around. You
well,
know, that,
exactly, to, exactly. Well, yeah.
You know, this might be interesting for you and the listeners. I don't know if you've heard of this, how he physically wrote these books, how he lived in VV, and he had a rather elaborate chateau there with a long driveway. When he said, I must write another book now, he would get in his car drive down the long driveway, stop at the bottom, and decide by a toss of a coin, do I turn left or right? He would then do that, and let's say he turned left. He would go exactly 7 hours until he came to either a hotel, motel, or some sort of lodging. And that was it. He stuck in there with an Olympia typewriter, the small little Hermes type, and a board. And he would sit in the bathroom, in the bathtub, and type on the put the board across the bathtub and type on there and have his meals delivered in there for 3 weeks. And that was it.
You see, this is what we always know, Arthur. We can guarantee that, like the consummate professional producer and writer that you are, you'll step into the breach, and when Annette is coughing in the background, you can go straight to the whole place. It's superb. It's great.
I've got terrible allergies at the moment. And it's very funny, because if I go out, and I go for a walk around here sometimes with very few people, but one day someone, you know, I have my mask, and if I need to, I put that on, one man was ahead of me, and he stopped, and was on his phone, chatting away, and I thought, I don't want to walk out into the road to get past you.
Mm.
So I coughed a couple of times. He bolted up the hill like you know.
Yeah. And I've got to ask you, Annette, I have a blue mask, which I use to get to the studio. It's a standard sky blue mask. Do you have any particular designer mask, or is it what sort of mask do you wear?
Oh, yes, no, I went online and found some.
Ah.
And I have a couple with, you know, sort of patterns and things, but the one I like best has got monkeys on it.
Ah. Well, there we are. And monkeys as in the animal species as opposed to the band of the 1960s, which would be interesting in its own way, really.
Yes,
Davy Jones, Mike Nesmith, Peter Tork and Mickey DeLenz. I'm sure that's a design way to be happy there.
Yeah.
Need to mention, of course, I actually have it in front of me now, Where Have I Been All My Life? Annette André's memoir with a foreword by Sir Roger Moore and an appreciation by Kenneth Cope. Outstanding material, still available, well worth accessing through Quite Media. That's quitemedia.co.uk, quitemedia.co.uk. We need to have a reprinting of your own text, Arthur, of course, which, as you know, is eminently loved and appreciated, about the Empire State Building being crashed into back in the 1940s. I think that would be well worthwhile. But time has once again cracked its little whip and said it's more than enough time to actually move on. But I do have to ask you those last two questions. As you know, we might be in ease of lockdown, full lockdown, whatever kind of lockdown you wish, but have you, Annette André, and Arthur Weingarten both had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the Midweek Drive today?
Yes. Days of yore brought to the present.
Yeah,
exactly. I mean, you know, there aren't many radio packages or podcast packages that can sift seamlessly from heavy political comment right the way through Dame Vera Lynn, through May Gray, and indeed tales of how Georges Simenon actually put his writing together and designer face masks. I mean, you know, that's
right.
Yeah.
And I have to tell you that in order to be here this morning, I had to check the calendar this morning to find out what day it was. Because I cannot remember what day
I'm
in.
I think as far as we're concerned, as far as the recordings are concerned, although, as we say, the podcast's available once they're online 24/7, the show's still going out probably Wednesdays, Thursdays. But Saturdays are normally the time when we do our recordings. So,
But I can't remember any day at the moment. I'm saying to Arthur, oh, we've got to go do something.
Right.
And he says,
right. But
it's not that day. Yeah.
Well, the critical question is, assuming we can coordinate diaries, times and various other things, will you both return in July?
Absolutely.
Absolutely, we will.
Yay!
Be well, Alex. Well.
Absolutely. Take care.
Like pebbles on a beach, kicked around, displaced by feet. Oh, like broken stones, you're out trying to get home. Like a loser's reach, too slow and sure. peaks. Yeah, some lost and alone. Yeah, trying to get home. As another fit shatters, but the little bit gets lost. What else really matters?
Regular 6:30 p.m. correspondent, whether he's in his PJs or not, the truth is out there. Director extraordinaire, Mr. Phil Leonis.
Never knowingly undersold. Thank you. So, how is it going, Phil Leonis? Welcome back to your usual slot of people are listening to sirenonline.co.uk and they feel as though it's the midweek drive. Its slots are Wednesday 5 through 7pm. We need to find out what's happening around about 6:30. And they've got you back, Phil.
Well, congratulations to them, first of all. Now, it's not a secret, right, that we are pre-recording this.
No.
Is that right?
No, we always tell the truth. Like Mike Pence, the American vice president, who also, I believe, always tells the truth.
Oh, yeah, of course, his truth. And as we have discussed at length, and as you know, I've made a documentary and making a second documentary
it's
about
out there.
That's always, truth is always subject to the perception of the individual beholding the truth.
Hmm.
But this is my truth, which is that I am both wearing pajamas and, grown-up clothes all at the same time. I'm wearing pants and pajama tops, almost as if I'm prepared for my usual midweek drive slot and prepared for action, if it requires.
And that is quite simply what's referred to as blended dressing. We've talked about blended learning, so Phil is actually manifesting blended dressing.
Which is how I prefer my salads.
This has been the official return of our American friends to the Midweek Drive, because we launched the hour with Jessica Burtis, who finally made it back to North Carolina. Yay, go, Jessica! And then, of course, a double whammy of Arthur Weingarten and Annette André, finishing off with the cherry on the proverbial top of the wonderful salad dressing, yourself, Phil Dearness.
And I just want everyone to know I am standing 6 feet away from the microphone.
Yes.
And wearing a mask.
Oh,
just
yes,
so that you know that
we're socially distanced.
Not that enough Americans do. I saw that we're averaging 50%. One in every two Americans are heeding suggestions and wearing masks, because somehow it has become a political issue and not a public health issue.
Yeah.
And it's quite amazing, and obviously has led to a little bit of a re-edit in the finishing stages of part two of The Truth Is Out There, because what does it say about us when we live at a time where if between 80% and 90% of the population would wear masks in public, we would have beat down already this coronavirus, and yet we can only manage to get 50% of the people on board with that kind of public health program.
Phil, if only China would actually throw its weight behind Donald Trump's re-election campaign, I'm sure the problem will be solved. But they're playing hard to get, and I don't know why, because surely he had support from the Russians allegedly in the last election.
Oh,
why
wow.
not move to support from Chinese?
You really want to make this political. I'm trying to elevate conversations. I believe in the words of Oscar Wilde, any issue worth debating is worth avoiding altogether. No, I truly do believe, as you know, that any conversation can be elevated, that better questions can be asked, that it is capable to have political discussions that don't automatically have to be partisan discussions.
Mm.
But I will share this with you, and you may have heard me discuss this with Dean at one point, but it has been very unnerving for me to watch almost any movie that is set in contemporary life.
Yeah.
Because my instinct when I see them...
Don't get together! Stay away!
Exactly. And it's not an intellectual reaction. It literally has become a viscerally ingrained reaction, and so it makes the viewing a tense experience. And yet what has been so comforting for me is to watch Japanese films of the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, because already, due to their history of public health crises, you see on screen that they culturally were already embracing concepts of social distancing, of not physical touching. When I watch an American movie from recent vintage, constantly I'm seeing characters shake hands and then immediately touch their faces. So what I believe, hopefully, as moving forward, once we get a vaccine, but even beyond that, is America of the future will need to look a lot like Japan of the past, because this will not be our only rodeo, as the saying goes.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the statistics, and we're hearing news that cases are rising again in the United States. But from the good news front, it does seem as though the United States has the highest number of confirmed infections in the world, about a quarter of the global total. So congratulations. Actually, Britain is coming in pretty much as a close second as well. So good news from that point of view. And one of the reasons
why... I'm sorry, I want to hear about Britain. I want to give our president his due, because he did promise that we would get so tired of winning when he got elected. And when a country with what? We have less than 5% of the global population, I believe, and yet we have 25% of the world's cases of coronavirus. I can honestly admit I am now so tired of winning.
A question we've been putting to all of our correspondents, and as this is the first time we've been able to welcome back our American correspondents and Midrick Drivets as well, do yourself and Lily have designer masks? Are you no mask at all wearers? And does Fuzz Aldrin have a mask? Or are they standard blue masks? What's your view in terms of the shape and aspect of the mask? We've heard from Annette Andre, she does indeed have a designer mask with monkeys on, apparently. What about yourself, Phil?
We do have designer masks. The mother of my goddaughter is a world-renowned fashion designer who immediately began to design masks when the pandemic struck and was using those proceeds to donate to various worthy causes and to underwrite the creation of PPE for hospitals, for frontline workers who were really experiencing a dearth of necessary PPE at the outset, especially of this outbreak. So we do have the designer masks. We also have the actual N95 masks, the medical grade masks that filter out 99.9% of everything that could cause an infection. Fuzz Aldrin does not have a mask. That is an oversight, no doubt, though, as you know, we keep Fuzz Aldrin in a hyperbaric chamber year-round subsequent to her health issues of a couple of years ago. But Alex, since I last really was able to interact with you, I was forced to contact the police where my father lives, my 93-year-old father, a heart attack survivor, and where he was cared for by my 57-year-old sister, who is a stroke survivor and a thyroid cancer survivor, because I had lost contact with them for several days. And because of the pandemic and the lockdowns and also the fear that these were both people that were in a vulnerable category, I did not want to be even remotely endangering them. So I was not able to go visit or cast my gaze upon them for more than 2 months. And my worst fears in that time were confirmed when I was unable to reach them, was forced to ask the police to go do a welfare check on my behalf. And indeed, they found that my sister had suffered a storm of strokes and moreover had pneumonia in her lungs, which had become sepsis, and had sustained an MDRO infection, which is toxic, mandates quarantine and isolation and biohazard cleanup. So I relocated to my father's house to care for him while I try to make the house livable again. And so I now have become equipped with many more different kinds of masks, is the point of the story. So I could easily open up a shop selling you every kind of mask your heart would desire. And when I go and visit my sister in acute care in the hospital, of course, every day they issue me yet another kind of mask. So...
See, that's what we love about you, Phil. You can take the most poignant of tales and actually give it a positive outcome. And that's one of the reasons why one of the recurring dreams I was having at the onset of the whole lockdown, and I was quite poorly. I don't think I actually had COVID. Who knows? Maybe I had, maybe I hadn't. But anyway, I was out of it for about 2 or 3 weeks where it was, you know, out of breath going up the stairs, all manner of other challenging. I just felt very, very weak. But I kind of had that recurring dream of the wonderful Wings of Desire movie. And I was thinking, ultimately, that at least is what we've got. We've got those guardian angels just sitting by our sides. We probably can't see them. Some people can, apparently. But, you know, they're there just hopefully in our corner, which is the positive side of things. I'm going to give you a little task to do between now and the next time we speak, Phil, because it's one of those science-based things. And I know you don't do math, but I think this might be worth trying, just as a thought. Okay? You can try it with Dean as well. You can put it on the next Chilpack Hollywood Hour. Don't forget, of course, shocked to find that Annette Andre and Arthur Weingarten said that apart from the BBC, no recognition at all in the United States of America of the recent death of Dame Vera Lynn, the darling, the Forces sweetheart, and of course the person behind We'll Meet Again and so many other classic songs who passed away. But that's by the by. You might also mention the actor who was, of course, to me, The Hobbit. He was also Henry V, then King Lear, but also passed away. That, of course, is the wonderful Sir Ian Holm.
Of course, you can expect that we will be celebrating both those lives and legacies on this week's episode of Chilpack Hollywood Hour. Ian Holm, as they mention all of the titles, what a wonderful, versatile actor, but also the star of one of my favorite Canadian films, actually. So I look forward to Dean having something to contribute about that. But then Vera Lynn has been making indelible contributions to every episode of my Los Angeles Breakfast Club podcast.
There we are.
And so that really was striking to me. It has been just a heartbreaking time, especially for the music industry, it has seemed to me these past few months. But Alex, I am sorry to hear that you were not doing well, and you know I did reach out to you because I had experienced an unnerving amount of silence.
This is true, but we're here, we're working through that, and your test or your task is this, Phil. Cut an onion in half, rub it on the sole of your foot, and see if 1 hour later you'll taste onion in your mouth. There we are. Cut an onion in half, rub it on the sole of your foot, and see if an hour later you start tasting onion in your mouth. You can have fun with Lily as well if you wish to sort of test it from that point of view as a late birthday treat. It's a thought. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the show today, Phil Leonis?
It certainly became interesting, though unreasonable, with this little test, which begs so many follow-up questions that I guess I'm going to have to ask you off-air.
Yeah, well, will you be back with us similar sort of time next week? Will you return?
Are we really going to record at the same time next week?
Well, I mean, if you're up for it, I'm up for it. It's become a day of the week that we effectively book the studio. We do as much recording as we can, so I feel if it's okay with you, it's okay with us.
It's better than okay with me. I have barely been able to make it through without these transatlantic correspondences.